made moves. Took to rebuild. You got this. All right, you ready?
All right. Turns out we're starting our first episode of the podcast the week before the trade deadline, and the stove is already red hot, especially from one team, the Detroit Tigers. Josh, tell us a little bit about the Tigers.
Yeah, so the Tigers, organization I'm pretty familiar with, have kind of reached a tipping point in their organizational philosophy and are looking to switch from being aggressive buyers at the deadline and trying to make that push to get to the playoffs and hopefully, you know, finally get to the top. And they are now looking at being sellers and actually have started to sell here before this trade deadline. I mean, the biggest move they've made so far has been unloading J.D. Martinez in return for three prospects, which, you know, got a mixed review on what they got back in return. But I think it's fair to say the Tigers are kind of new to this. Let's cut them a break. They need to see what it's like to be on this side of the transaction. But they're in a position, man. They got some large contracts that are bogging them down over the next few years. I think we all know about the Justin Verlander one that they are openly looking to trade right now. But we also have to consider that they have some other contracts, too, that look much less likely to be moved. One's along the line of Jordan Zimmermann, who still has roughly about $90 million left on his contract. Victor Martinez has about $36 million left on his contract, but has been playing well below Victor Martinez levels, making it very hard to see him going anywhere. And another one would be Justin Upton, who, even though he could potentially opt out of his contract at the end of the season, he would be looking at giving up $90 million over the next 5 years. So going to be interesting to see what decision he makes there. See whether he likes money or if he just likes to, you know, take gambles, take risks and like to.
There is no gamble in the world that would make me want to give up $90 million.
The funniest thing, too, is he's having a decently good year, but we'll get back to that in a second. I think first we really want to just kind of look at this roster and figure out, you know, what can the Tigers do? What options do they have moving forward?
Well, I think before that, we got to talk about what they can't do. So to talk about the Tigers this year, I think, and I don't know if you'll agree, we kind of have to talk about the Yankees first.
Yeah, I can see that. Which part do you want to talk about?
So the Yankees, I want to talk about how the Yankees rebuilt their, not their entire team. They'd obviously drafted well. They drafted Aaron Judge. And they drafted Gary Sanchez, and they signed Gary Sanchez internationally. So they drafted Aaron Judge and they signed Gary Sanchez internationally, but we've seen them basically in 1 year rebuild their entire farm system to be ready to compete because they're trading relievers. They traded Andrew Miller for premier prospect package headlined by Gleyber Torres. And they traded Aroldis Chapman once before we signed him, a new move that you love. Yeah. So they traded Andrew Miller for a prospect package headlined by Clint Frazier, who's already made his debut, and Justice Sheffield, who's a top 100 pitcher in their prospect. And they traded Aroldis Chapman once before re-signing him for a prospect package headlined by Gleyber Torres, who is now number two prospect in baseball. Josh, why can't the Tigers do what the Yankees did?
Well, if you look at that Tiger bullpen, I don't think you're going to find an Andrew Miller or an Aroldis Chapman lurking around there. That being said, there is some talent there. I mean, Justin Wilson is definitely the one option out there that you could look at and say, like, hey, that's a major league closer that can bring back a pretty solid return. But I mean, after that, it gets kind of rough. Now you're looking at somebody like a Bruce Rondon, who is somebody who 2 years ago managed to get banished from the locker room. I don't know how you do that at a major league level.
Was he involved in the Prince Fielder Miguel Cabrera fiasco?
No, he wasn't involved in that. It was just one of those things where, like, he just didn't like coming to work. Even though he was the closer at the time and was given opportunities to help them get to the playoffs, like, he just didn't want to show up on time. He didn't want to be a major leaguer. He didn't want to be a professional.
What about Shane Green? But, is there any value there with him? Or, I know you already mentioned Dawson Wilson. I mean, Daniel Stumpf and Shane Green, they're not world beaters. They haven't thrown a lot of innings either, but they're not bad.
They're not bad, but it's been pretty evident that the market on relievers this year has not been actually as high as we thought it would be. Case in point being the Nationals trade with the Athletics, and basically they were able to send none of their, they were able to, excuse me, keep all of their top prospects and be able to pull back two very productive relievers, albeit they had some questions tagged along to each of them. But when you look in the Tigers bullpen, I mean, beyond Justin Wilson and maybe a Shane Green and maybe a Bruce Rondon, it starts to get pretty thin there. I mean, you might be able to throw in Alex Wilson to kind of sweeten the deal, but the rest of those names are definitely not anywhere near what the Yankees had a few years ago. But riffing on that point, I mean, good job by the Yankees. They kind of made this decision a few years ago to say, like, hey, look, we're not going to be the guys just spending all the money in the sport, right? It's starting to get too expensive. We're going to start using analytics too. We're going to be smarter about our money. And I think they've realized that, hey, you know what? Why don't we use our money to sign these guys, trade them away, and then just use our money to bring them right back? Seems to be the best way to get the best return on investment. And it's helped them basically rebuild a farm system that was pretty thin there for a while.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because there's this idea with non-competitive ball clubs that the best idea of how to run your team is ABTR, always be trading relievers. It's how the Yankees built their current situation. The Rays and the Red Sox before them have made great advantages for themselves by trading relievers. And by contrast, we saw a Royals team that was really competitive, that held onto their star bullpen, and have now more or less disappeared into ether, or at least been caught up with by the rest of their conference competition in the NL Central. But we're really not here to talk about the Orioles and the Royals. We're here to talk about the Tigers. Let's talk about Justin Wilson real quick. I know he's already been traded. Excuse me, not Justin Wilson. J.D. Martinez. I've been thinking about the Detroit Tigers for far too long. J.D. Martinez. That was not a huge prospect pullback that we've seen in other, well, not so much marquee, but other deadline deals in previous seasons.
No, it was not. It seems like Dawell Lugo was the centerpiece of the trade for the Tigers, and he's a 22-year-old third baseman, but he hasn't played very well up at AA right now, and that's as high as he's gotten. So it seems to me that the Tigers seem to have done their own kind of scouting and possibly knew that they were going to be dealing with the Diamondbacks, who had a need in outfield and were going to definitely make a move forward. And they kind of scouted through and found prospects that they were happy with, rather than trying to just go after a single player in the top 100 or even the team's top 10 prospect list. And, you know, it might be an organizational philosophy. I mean, the Tigers right now have a pretty thin organization. I mean, they only have one farm system. They only have one prospect in the top 100 right now, and that's a 19-year-old pitcher who's probably not going to be up anytime soon, not anytime before 2020 at least. So it seems like they might be favoring the approach of trying to get as many somewhat upside type players into the organization to kind of help and see if they can get five or six that could stick as a core later on in the future.
So it sounds like the Tigers are going for quantity over quality. Looking at it from an outside perspective, this kind of tells me that there's either not a lot of interest out there in the players the Tigers have to offer, i.e. their value is down, or that top 100 and an individual's team's top 20 or 30 or whatever, however they look at it, their top prospects are being rated at a much higher value these days than they have in years past.
Yeah, well, we've definitely seen teams value their top prospects a lot more. You see, the Dave Dombrowskis are kind of a rare breed now where, you know, you went out and you drafted a bunch of guys and you would use them just as packages to kind of bring in major league proven talent already after they had signed with another team. But it seems like teams now are kind of looking at it. I know the Nationals currently are sitting there with a few holes in their outfield due to injuries. And they've already said, look, we're not going to be trading any of our top three guys right now. We're going to do whatever we can to solve it from within because there's just a high value on there. I mean, they've been heavily resistant to the idea of trying to trade Victor Robles away. Whereas you see a team maybe like the Dodgers who, when they have so many of them, they can use it as a trade package. But even still, they're holding on to a Walker Buehler, Alex Verdugo, and a couple other names where they just are still hesitant to kind of make the trade. Although, you know, at the other end, we do see the Cubs who decided to go ahead and, you know, make the move and go get their guy in Jose Quintana and go ahead and pay with two top 100 players for a pitcher who was actually having his worst year of his career. So it seems to go team by team, but I think overall as an industry, prospects are being seen as highly regarded assets right now.
And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I see no real way for that to change. I think in some sense, the higher value prospects are maybe being a little overvalued considering what the bust rate is on a major league prospect, which a lot of people don't realize is pretty high. I mean, Josh, you can call BS on this if you have better information than I do, but as my understanding is, the bust rate on a top 100 prospect who hasn't made it to AAA yet is about 35%. It could be higher, but I don't see why, you know, a top, you know, AD prospect in the game who's on the lower end of that bracket is more valuable than, you know, a proven young commodity. But hey, that's just me.
No, you were making a good point earlier. We were talking about catchers and you were mentioning, you know, hey, a top 100 catching prospect, you know, how much would that fetch in return? As compared to a major league average, but, you know, established catcher and what you could expect to get in return for that. I mean, you would almost expect the former to be able to net you a higher return, and he hasn't really gone out to show anything yet, has no stats to back up his reputation. So it does seem like there is a high priority and high importance placed on prospects right now, and it seems like teams are overvaluing potential given the success rate of most prospects, or actually, well, I guess, few prospects who make it to the league and are able to produce at extraordinary levels.
Yeah, and just to put a quick name to what we're talking about here, first, we should point out, and I didn't realize this, there's only six qualified catchers so far this year, which says a lot about the number of plate appearances that major league catchers get. But that being said, what we're talking about is not, you know, trade the number three prospect for a league average catcher. It's, you know, what is the difference between Jan Gomes of the Indians, and, you know, somebody like a Christian Vasquez. You know, young team-controlled catcher who's probably not going to provide much value at the bat, but up until he grew out of prospect qualification, was considered one of the top 10 catching prospects in the game. I'm not entirely convinced, even though I'm a Red Sox fan and a huge Christian Vasquez fan, entirely convinced he's better than Yan Gomes. But speaking of catchers, Josh, Alexi Avila, Alex Avila, I keep calling him Alexi. Alex Avila is on the trade block, right? Alex Avila is on the trade block. First of all, is he worth it?
Well, is he worth it is not really why he's on the trade block. I think the Tigers are looking at it and saying, hey, we need to sell high on this guy. I mean, this is a guy who, for the most part, had always been a kind of a high on-base percentage guy, drew a lot of walks, but didn't really make a lot of contact and struck out a good amount. Well, it seems like this year he's been able to make a lot of contact, even though he does have currently a 382 BABIP, which is much higher than his career average. But he has been producing it a lot of luck.
For those of you, for the most part, we're just assuming that everyone is who's listening to us knows what BABIP is. But for those of you who don't, batting average on balls in play indicates exactly what the name would suggest, is that on only the balls that are put into play, what is your batting average? It kind of describes luck.
Yep, and for the most part, for most major leaguers, you would expect that number to be around 300, kind of similar to Woba. And it seems that, you know, a 382 BABIP would indicate that, you know, hey, he's getting on a lot of bleeders that are kind of getting through, and he's getting on base by just right now hitting them where they're not. That's something that very few people have as a talent. Typically, for most people, there are spikes and there are valleys, and it seems like Alex Avila is currently in a spike, and it seems like the Tigers are trying to capitalize on that spike, especially since defensively he's a rather poor catcher. He usually ranks in the top 10. I think he's currently the 11th worst catcher by Baseball Prospectus's framing runs above average. Stat Corner also does their own framing numbers. He's in the bottom three there. So he's not a very good receiver. He's definitely an offensive-minded catcher, and he used to really be neither, but at least there's some offensive value there that they're trying to unload and pull back some value on, especially since they have James McCann, who is a young, controllable catcher. He also usually rates pretty poor on receiving statistics, but he doesn't really provide that much of a downgrade. He's also himself a major league average catcher that they have control over for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced that he's going to be traded. I mean, there are very few movable pieces, and they're desperate to unload some salary. But I just don't see where there's a buyer's market for Alex Avila, or any kind of market, really. I mean, I could see the Brewers and the Cubs making move for catchers. The Nationals as well, since Matt Wieters has not exactly been swinging a heavy bat this year. But like you said, he's a bad defender. This is not a guy you're picking up to play every day down the stretch.
Exactly. I mean, he's currently signed to a $2 million deal. It's a one-year deal, so he would be a very, very, very cheap rental. But he wouldn't really net a huge return. And, I mean, there is just kind of the nepotism aspect of it, of like, I mean, his dad is the general manager. It would seem kind of heartless to be able to sell your son for a sack of baseballs, but I would be very interested to see. I don't think there's a need out there either. I think if you do decide to go after Avila, you would be getting a bench bat to kind of come out and make, you know, spot starts against righties. And that's just not something that's going to net a huge return. So the Tigers are probably better off served just holding on to him.
Here's a quick sidebar for the podcast. Josh, how many baseballs would you sell me for?
Let's see. Those baseballs are usually about $8 a pop. I got you at about I'd go with a dozen. Yeah, I'd sell you for a box of a dozen.
You're kind. You know what? Let's make it a baker's like seven.
Let's make it a baker's dozen. How about I get you for 13?
A baker's dozen of baseballs. It's exactly how much I'm worth in my heart. What did you have the value on him if he did get traded? We had talked about this. I figured one top 30 plus an organizational piece.
And this is for?
Alex Avila's value.
Yeah, so that goes back to what we were saying with the major league average character. I would be pretty impressed if he could pull back a top 30. I see him probably sitting more like a top 50 to 30. I mean, he is having a good year, but his track record is very so-so. But I definitely could see top 50 to 30 and then maybe throwing in an org piece as well, just to make good on the deal.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't understand the value ranking for putting on players, this is similar to the package that the Tigers got for JD Martinez, probably a little smaller, what we're describing. They got Duan Lugo, Sergio Alcantara, and Jose King. We're basically talking about leaving Sergio Alcantara at home and just taking Lugo and King, if I'm reading you right, Josh.
Yeah, that's correct. I would agree with that. I mean, I think the Tigers could have gotten more for JD Martinez, but it seems like the market just kind of dried up on them for some reason. So,
and without a market there
that,
for Avila, it seems like it's going to go nowhere. There has been a Tigers rumor that's been swirling around that you and I were both intrigued by, and that is the Brewers' potential interest in closer Justin Wilson. Just the Brewers have potentially been in contact with a package of prospects for Justin Wilson, who's the closer, and Ian Kinsler at second base.
Right, which is interesting because the Brewers right now are basically being offensively led by Travis Shaw and Eric Sogard. So it kind of begs the question. I know it's pretty interesting to imagine someone saying that about a potential playoff team, but it begs the question.
As a Red Sox fan, it makes me feel like I'm going insane to say the Brewers are being led by Travis Shaw.
He's been uber value this year. Hilarious. But it's kind of one of those things where, let's say they make the move and they do pull the trigger and, you know, bring on Wilson and Kinsler, it's pretty easy to see where Wilson would fit into that bullpen. But Kinsler, a little bit less so. I mean, he's a pretty expensive guy in terms of what the Brewers typically play for payers. I mean, he's got $11 million left on his contract this year with the club option for $10 million next year. And it seems like he would basically be a spot starter or maybe even just a bench bat for him, you know, bringing that coveted playoff experience, but otherwise not necessarily filling a need for the Brewers.
Yeah, I was looking at that too, and I don't fully understand where he's going to play. I mean, he's signed through next year. He's got a $5 million buyout on next year's option, which isn't expensive, but it's also not cheap. Could this be a situation of the Tigers kind of bootstrapping in Kinsler to another guy, or are you not buying that theory?
No, I could. I buy that theory. I could see them at least trying to kind of jam that piece in there, fitting a square peg into a round hole, mainly because of the rumors we've heard off of another player they're trying to currently offload, Justin Verlander, who, you know, is signed to a contract through 2020, basically paying him $28 million a year. So he still has $100 million left on his contract. And the Tigers are reportedly trying to eat up none of that as they move him to other teams of interest. So it seems like, you know, both with Verlander and potentially with other players like Kinsler and maybe even Jordan Zimmerman, who has apparently been placed onto the trading block. No, I don't know.
There's a better
but it seems
chance of me paying up on the bet we made earlier than of Jordan Zimmerman getting traded.
Hey, man, you never know until you ask. You never know until you just kind of throw that flyer out there and see if someone responds.
What's crazy about Jordan Zimmerman is he's not just been bad, but his peripherals have dropped in every category almost overnight.
I mean, he has kind of had the downfall that you would expect to precipitate someone before, like, a major injury. Like, it's one of those where, you know, I mean, he went to another league, and the American League is a tougher league to pitch in. At least it's historically been so. But not that big of a difference, and it just kind of seems like he forgot how to play.
I don't know. He just forgot how to baseball.
Just it's not a Rick Ankiel like yip series, but it's definitely one where you're just kind of scratching your head, going, "What's the matter, dude?"
Yeah, I mean, if you pull up, I just pulled up his Fangraphs page while you're talking. The only area he's improved on, and he's, which is interesting, thrown the exact same amount of innings this year as he did last year now, and he's just gotten worse across the board. He's striking out more people per nine, but he's also walking more people per nine. So who cares? I mean,
Jordan's right, exactly.
Bad.
It's funny too. I mean, it's not even like it was a blip on the screen when he was in Washington. I mean, he was pretty consistent. His FIP and XFIP numbers were pretty consistent through the last 4 or 5 years while he was there. And as soon as he got to the Tigers, he had that really hot start, and everybody in Washington was sitting there going, how could we let this guy walk? And I mean, after like the, I think, seventh or eighth start, I mean, it just all went downhill fast.
Yeah. Almost makes you wonder if Mike Rizzo is just smarter than he looks.
I mean, we got to give him credit. We definitely, you know, you and I were considering the Madsen Doolittle trade as something the Nationals might pull, but, you know, secretly.
We overpaid. We way overpaid.
We overpaid. Yeah, we overpaid.
So we do have to give props to Mike Rizzo for, well, being smarter than us, I guess.
By a good amount.
But quite a bit. By exactly 1-1, so. Anyway, we're talking about Justin Verlander and Jordan Zimmerman. Justin Verlander's been regressing as well. He had the one season last year where it seemed like he was getting it back, but even this year it was closer to his 2015 numbers. Where do you see either of these guys finding a match, if anywhere? I saw the Astros, the Dodgers, and maybe the Nationals looking at starting pitching.
Yep, I'd agree with that. I mean, the thing here is just that the contract and, you know, like I said earlier, how they refuse to basically pay off any of it, it's limiting their trade partners in this situation. I think the interesting one there is, like, the Astros have definitely been, you know, rumored to be going after a bunch of different starting pitchers out in the market. But we're seeing that they have a lot of young talent that is going to be entering their arbitration years, either are in their arbitration years or will be entering them over the next 3 or 4 years. So it's
Springer and Altuve are coming up this year, aren't they?
Exactly. Although Altuve, they actually signed to a pretty good deal. I think it's his last year of the deal, but they will have him for about $6 million next year, which is unbelievably, it's an unbelievable contract. Shout out to whoever got him to sign that one. But
Big show.
those other talents, kind of like a George Springer, I even like a Carlos Correa. I know he's got a couple of years yet, but him,
Yeah, his
Riznik,
contract's gonna be a beast.
Keuchel, McHugh, like there's going to be a lot of guys out there who they're going to have to basically save up for now if they want to keep that core together. So while the Astros, I think, could take a flyer and see if they could get the Tigers a
They have
chance
the
in their mind.
firepower.
Yo, yeah, they got some talent down there, and the Tigers are in desperate need of it. But if the Tigers are really firm about not paying any part of that contract, I don't see them really pulling the trigger on that one.
And if I'm running the Astros as an organization, I don't think I want to. It's probably not worth fighting for maybe this year or next year to give up, the Francisco Martins, the Kyle Lewis, any of the top prospects. Excuse me, Kyle
Like a
Tucker.
Kyle
Kyle Lewis
Tucker.
plays for Seattle Mariners system. So give up the Kyle Tucker, the Francisco Martins, even the Colin Moran or the Derek Fisher that I think it would take to, anchor a Justin Verlander trade package. I just don't see it as being worth it for the Astros. Is it worth it for maybe the Nats, the Dodgers?
Well, the Dodgers are in an interesting position because they just got the bad news that Kershaw is going to be down for the next 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, I don't think most people will worry once he gets back if he's going to be able to pitch or not. He's shown that, he knows what he's doing. Even with a slight home run rate this year, I mean, he's still, I think, currently the NL ERA leader, or at least, one or two in that category. But the thing is, when you look at that Dodger rotation, it's been interesting because it's basically been Kershaw and then Alex Wood, which, I'm sure Dodgers brass has just been elated about that. That guy came out of nowhere. He was horrific last year. And then you have basically a hodgepodge of, I don't want to say failed starters, but
You can call them failed starters.
starters who have let's say like three skills instead of the five tools that we normally want out of our players. The throwing Kenta Maeda, Hyunjin Ryu, Brandon McCarthy. I mean, they've got a good mix of bodies that they've just been kind of throwing out there to eat up innings that, you expect to see kind of coming out of the bullpen in funky situations when it comes playoff time. So I think the Dodgers are in a position where they have the depth in terms of their farm system to kind of give up a piece to try and make this trade. They obviously have the financial means to be able to afford a contract like that. And quite frankly, they've shown that they're willing to take chances on players who have shown injuries in the past or have kind of been in decline recently to try and kind of rehab them or reconstruct them back to their former glory. I think Alex Wood is actually one of the names that you can throw in there. After a really good rookie year, he just kind of fell off the table, but has kind of resurged back to life this year, which is nice to see. So I think the Dodgers are probably going to be the leading candidates on it. I think if you're the Nationals, you want to make that trade, especially now that Strasburg has gone down with an apparent injury, though we don't know how severe or how long he'll be
Yeah, and
out.
with Joe Ross running down for the year, he just had a Tommy John surgery, or he's having again sometime shortly. But Joe Ross is
Right.
gone. You're basically running on Max Scherzer, Gio Gonzalez, and some dreams.
Yeah, basically.
But
And you want that third starter, but that $28 million for somebody who's definitely in decline right now, I think it's going to be hard to swallow, especially since you know that your organization is basically just saving up so you can keep face of the franchise Bryce Harper
Well, it's
around.
not really 28 million, it's 100 million at least. Unless, of course,
Yeah,
you get
excuse me.
Detroit to eat the guarantee, but we already discussed they're not going to eat the guarantee.
Yeah, because he signed through 2020. I forgot to mention. So yes, you are correct. That's a hundred over $100 million.
So
You got Max Scherzer and Gio Gonzalez and some question marks. Assuming Eric Fetty doesn't come up and just light the world on fire, and assuming they're not going to be able to get Sonny Gray because they probably don't have that many assets. I mean, you're Mike Rizzo. I'm still not sure I want Verlander. At that point, he's probably the next best guy available, but is Verlander worth more than Juan Soto and Victor Robles?
It's interesting because, you know, as we mentioned, the Nats are kind of in a very, very strict win now mode with a closing window and coming soon. But I just don't think, like, if you look at it and you see that you don't get Harper in the future and you have a ton of money open up, you have a lot of talent there in those top three prospects that you can hold on to for a long time. I just don't see the risk of taking on Verlander as he's pitched this year. I mean, if you wanted to ask me that the end of last year, I'm sorry, at the trade deadline last year, if I would have made this move to eat up the $100 million that was left, I might have actually gone ahead and said yes. But now that we've seen him kind of regress back to the numbers that we had seen the previous years, it's much less desirable, I think, if you're a Nats fan or Mike Rizzo.
I'd normally be inclined to agree with you, as I usually do, but I'm going to say it's actually going to be worth it for the Nationals to trade for if they can hang on to their big three of Robles, Soto, and Fetty. If you can build some kind of a package around Carter Kibo and maybe a Will Crow, yeah, why not give up Will Crow, Carter Kieboom for Justin Verlander for a few years? I mean, Verlander isn't Verlander anymore. But when we talk about him regressing, it's not like he's been out and out bad and on an in-game rotation that also contains Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg and Gio Gonzalez in the future, because he is signed under multiple years. I think it could be worth,
I'd agree with that. Yeah, I can see your point on that one. I think if you can definitely hold on to your top three and then be able to, you know, send a package of org players, well, I shouldn't say org
right.
players, but let's call them mid-level prospects, and you can ship them up to the Tigers. I mean, right now, like I said, the Tigers, they want to rebuild that farm system, but they also just want to get some of that money off the books. And I think for the most part, they would be happy to go ahead and move him for a below market value. We saw that they basically moved JD Martinez at a below market value, and he wasn't nearly as expensive, though he was going to get a nice bump in arbitration. So I think it's I think it's going to be an interesting move to see if Rizzo can pull that off, because if he can hold on to, you know, his shiny toys and be able to get a new one, then, I mean, more power to him. That's an impressive play.
All right. That's all I've got on the Tigers off the top of my head. Anybody else you find interesting on that roster? Jose Iglesias going anywhere? Miguel Cabrera?
Jose Iglesias, it's kind of funny. I mean, I can tell you right now, the front office is not a big fan of him. They're not exactly sold on him as a everyday player, in the sense of they think that he kind of take plays off. He's not necessarily bad for the clubhouse, but he's not someone that they can trust kind of going forward. I would not be surprised if they also tried to move him too, even though he's still pretty cheap and under control. But looking through the rest of that lineup, you just have a bunch of contracts that nobody would want to take on, or you just have a bunch of bodies that no one would really make a trade to go get, even if they needed some depth. So I think the Tigers are basically going to have to try and sell off as many parts as they have this year, and then look to draft pretty well and sign some international players pretty well to build up that organization again, because they don't really have the assets, the tradable assets that are necessary to pull off the Yankee rebuild that we were talking about at the beginning of the show.
Right on. Well, it's good talking to you, Josh.
Same to you.
All right. I assume you'll be here next week.
Yes, I will. Hopefully we'll have some more news to go over at that time.
Trade deadline week, baby. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It's been fantastic so far already.
All right, folks. We'll see you all next week. I'll figure something out.